Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign. If you love old movies, Hollywood history, or the golden age of filmmaking, you've come to the right place. This is the podcast that talks about amazing stories of Tinseltown from another era and fascinating conversations with writer-producer Steve Kubine and actress-writer Nan McNamara.
So, Steve, did Ava Gardner and Howard Hughes have a good relationship?
Well, they did, until he dislocated her jaw.
What?
Well, don't worry. She hit him back with an ashtray.
From Beneath the Hollywood Sign is the gin joint for you.
Welcome everyone to the Film Vault. That is Anderson. This is Brian Bishop. Early morning recording today, rare early morning recording, for our annual Top 5 Fall Preview episode, the Top 5 or More Movies. We're looking forward to coming to theaters, this fall. This is normally the prestige, Anderson, the prestige season. We're going to get a lot of films that could be revisited around Oscar time, award season. And we will count down the ones we're most looking forward to seeing, possibly.
Yeah, I love this episode. I love doing this one. I love doing the research for it. I love looking ahead. I love getting excited seeing movies that, or seeing names and titles of movies that will become household names, some of these. Some of them, not so much. But some of these movies are movies that we'll be referring to and talking about for years to come, maybe even for the rest of our lives, Brian. And
possibly.
For some of our listeners, this might be the first time they even hear some of these titles that will be a part of their lives forever. So it's fun. It's exciting. It's meaningful. It's got purpose.
A lot of volatility in my list. I'm looking at my list. I don't feel 100% confident in any one of these movies being great. I hope they're all great, but there is a floor for these films that is low. Like there's a world where my 1 through 5 all are bad. I hope that's not true, but that's on the table.
Well, I mean, can't you say that about any unknown entity in all walks of life, Brian?
Yeah, I feel like there are certain movies you're like, yeah, that's going to be good no matter what. Whereas mine all contain some volatility.
There's
more than I'd like.
There's one on my list that I'd be shocked if I'm not kind of floored by, because I've been floored by this director's work and every facet and everything that they've done thus far. So, and let me tell you this, Brian, a little teaser. This is a fairly new revelation for me, this director. So this is a movie that's on my list that you won't hear until late in my list because it's my number two. This is a film that probably would not have made it just as recently as last year, but now there's no way I don't have this director's work on my list. I should also say that, a bit of a cop out, but I'm doing the most recent to most distant. That's how I categorize. That's how I listed them. That's how I ordered them, Brian. So my number 10, I'm doing 10, will be the one that's coming out most earliest.
Latest in the year.
No, earliest. Going in order, okay, chronological.
So you're starting with the ones that are coming up the soonest. Ending with the ones that are coming up the farthest.
That's
out.
Right. That's how I'm doing it. That's how
look at you.
I'm
look at
doing you. It. But I'm, you know, I like to think of this as of this show of this, you know, weekly program as a service. I like to help the listeners out, and you know,
I heard that
we like to you know, do all the work so that you a lot of the heavy lifting, and obviously, you know, these are movies that we are excited about, not necessarily every single person listening to this would have the same list, but I think there's going to be a lot of crossover. I think we have a listener list this week. I'll look for that during the break.
I hope so.
I believe we do. I gave Avery the morning off because he was up very late last night mixing our show because we had to do remote recordings, which we try not to do, and we're not that great at it. But I'm sick, and every time I have any kind of semblance of a cold, I try to avoid Brian just because I don't want to complicate his life.
God bless.
Do not say God bless. And yeah, I've taken a couple tests, and I have Novid, so I'm not infected with the COVID, but I have something that's just kind of making me feel depressed and sick and stuffy and overwhelmed. I just feel run down. So right. Better safe than sorry, well, Brian.
Let's perk you up with a little fall preview, huh?
Yeah, let's do that. Quick little announcement. I announced it last week, too, but in case you didn't hear that, I have cast that I can announce for my short film that will hopefully lead to the narrative feature. And I'll just do it real quick here. I won't spend a whole lot of time, but playing one of my leads is a kid named Eddie Levy, a very, very talented, young up-and-coming actor named Eddie Levy. If you watch AP Bio, that's probably his most recognizable role. He plays Anthony on AP Bio, that Glenn Howerton show, which, you know, I've decided I'm gonna see if the wife and I can watch that one, because I bet it's very funny. Glenn Howerton is always great, and I love Eddie Levy's role as Anthony in just what I've seen. I watched a ton of clips of his work as Anthony on AP Bio, and he is signed on to the project that I wrote, and then I'll be shooting a short for called Loaded for Bear later in October.
It's your responsibility. You got to check it out.
I don't know if I have to watch that entire series, but at least be...
Gotta do it.
I've watched a lot of his onstage performances. I did my due diligence. Also, coming to the production is a man named John Kapelos, who is mostly known by our audience probably as Carl the... So forgive me if you already heard this in the last episode, but just doing a quick review here. He is Carl the janitor in The Breakfast Club. He was also the oily bow hunk in 16 Candles. He's also the sniffing accountant in Seinfeld, and he has been working consistently over the last many decades. As you might imagine, he has over 200 IMDb credits, and he has lots of range, and he is down for the cause. He's just a swell individual. We spoke for some time last week. I have a meeting scheduled with him tomorrow that I'm going to switch to a Zoom meeting because I'm sick. I don't want to get him sick. But John Kapelos is a very, very talented actor. Comes to the production. And then finally, I have a guy named Keith Coogan. I still think of him as a kid because I watched so much of his stuff when he was a kid, when I was a kid. But Keith Coogan, Brian, you're very familiar with Keith Coogan.
Yes, he'll forever be a kid in my mind.
He was in Cousins. He was in Hiding Out with John Cryer. And then also he was in both Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead and Adventures in Babysitting, which almost makes me feel like maybe I should change the my film's title to something to do with babysitting, even though it has nothing to do with
totally.
Just to appease Mr. Coogan. But very excited to get all of these guys together. We'll be doing a table read here before we shoot the short, and who knows, you know, this is all part of the process in getting the big project off the ground. So if you would like to be involved, if you would like to be a part of this in any shape or form, go to loadedforbeardoc.com, loadedforbeardoc.com, and you can contribute and become a part of it, because all of these efforts are leading to us having a nice stable of proof of concept with the documentary as well as the short film, so that we can go out and pitch it and try and get funding for the actual big feature narrative film, which I hope to be shooting early next year, if not late this year, at least in pre-production. So I think we're on the right path and things are good. It's a very, very worthwhile cause and it's awesome. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Exciting. Where do people go? Loadedforbeardoc.com.
Yes. And thank you for affording me this opportunity to let our people know, Brian, what I'm up to.
Buddy, it's exciting.
When I'm not doing the old film vault or selling real estate. Now, I don't sell real estate. I bring buyers and sellers together. That's what I do in real estate.
Yeah, you're a broker.
That's what realtors do. I'm not technically a broker. I'm a licensee. I'm a realtor. But it's a misconception. People think that, you know, you sell houses if you're a realtor. No, the owner of the house is selling. You're brokering the deal. So in that sense, you are a broker.
There you go. All right, very cool. All right, we got a lot of exciting stuff going on, including our top five or more.
Yeah.
If you're Anderson, for our fall preview, let's dive in, man. Let's crossover. I got to imagine a couple of mine are on your list.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if we didn't have a couple crossover. And I think that you probably noticed in your research too, Brian, that I was kind of mentioning on the Flick Fashion episode that there is usually we're used to seeing almost all very top end type movies that have already screened and premiered at like Cannes or Sundance or TIFF or South By, you know, the big festivals, or they're just big giant studio movies, machine movies that are Oscar bait. And this year is different because of the strike. They have pushed a lot of movies. Some of the movies that were supposed to be coming out this fall season are actually pushed to next summer, as is the case, or spring, like Dune. Dune is no longer part of the fall catalog.
Oh, goddamn.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, how much of my top five will not come out this year? I'm guessing the over-under is 1.5.
It's funny, and this is not unfamiliar territory. We went through similar things with COVID. In fact, we're still going through some after effects of COVID and the schedule being all off. It used to be much more straightforward and easy to identify what's coming out and when, because they were very forthcoming about it. And now everything seems to be fluid. Also throw in the complications of streaming packages and platforms. And it's more difficult now than ever to really be straight with as far as what movies that are getting theatrical releases and when.
Nailing down a release date for some of these is tough. I have multiple days for a couple of movies.
But I think that for the most part, these movies will see the light of day before the year is over. I do believe that to be the case, because a lot of them have already been moved and now they have solid dates. So we will see. Right. If you recall last year, I foolishly had a Martin Scorsese project on my top five fall preview, I believe it was. And here we are a year later, and that same movie may or may not be on my list again this year, because that I'm still not sure if that was user error. Or I think there really was some talk of it being ready for last year, but maybe I'm foolish. Anyhow.
Well, either way, we'll hear more about that later, possibly more than once. Mm-hmm. But you should start off. You have two for each entry.
All right. But I feel like I talked so much. But all right. Why don't I do this? If you recall, we did a top five earlier in the year, Brian, where I was letting you know of the sequels, prequels, and reboots and remakes that I was willing to watch. I had five of those that out of like the impossibly large list of Hollywood movies that are prequels, sequels, remakes, or reboots. And one of the movies that was on that list is here at my number 10 for the fall preview, and that is The Exorcist: Believer, which is not a reboot. Yes. It is a direct sequel to the first one, which I continue to cite as my scariest movie I've ever seen. I know I'm not alone when I say that. It is one of my favorite movies ever, The Exorcist. How can you not love that movie? It's just a masterpiece. And I'm very curious to see what David Gordon Green does with this sequel. So I can leave it there. Ellen Burstyn does make a return.
A fitting tribute to the memory of Billy Friedkin, your friend.
Brian, stop. But yes, it is time-wise. Obviously, it was not orchestrated that way. But yes, it does come on the heels of William Friedkin's death. And we will see what David Gordon Green does with his idea of what should have been the direct sequel to the original Exorcist, because there have been a number.
There have been sequels, right? Like schlocky sequels in the past.
Yeah, I saw the one. There was like Day of the Locust, and then I know that Brad Dourif delivered a commanding performance in Exorcist 3, but they weren't the type of movies that really are a good lineage to the original, because the original was so good. Now, there's a good chance that this movie is not good. This is not the first time that David Gordon Green has tried to update a horror film from the past. He did Halloween Kills, which came in with mixed reviews, to say the least. But he's been involved with a lot of the Halloween movies. But we will see. We will see. And you know, even if I was doing this just most anticipated to least anticipated the most, The Exorcist would probably be the closest to not being on that list. The Exorcist: Believer is the one that on my list that I'm least excited about, but I'm still excited and I will be seeing it. October 6th is when it comes out. And then Brian?
Yes, sir.
There's a movie that we've all been talking about for quite some time.
Oh boy.
It's impossibly long, and it has a fantastic cast and a pretty good director. It's 3 hours.
Is it Dune?
3 hours and 26 minutes. A man named Martin Scorsese is the director. Eric Roth is one of the writers on it. Eric Roth is a legendary writer. And we have both D's in this. We have both D. Niro and DiCaprio.
And I was told this is coming out last year.
And as well as John Lithgow is in here. Brendan Fraser, he's lost some weight and he's able to get back on his feet. That's a horrible joke. Apologies. And then we also have my boy Jesse Plemons. And of course,
yeah, don't bury the lead.
Talking about Killers of the Flower Moon. And they just dropped a new trailer, a second trailer. And it looks very Scorsese. And you got to hope that it's not too Scorsese like The Irishman was for my taste. I do think that this one is going to hit the mark. And I can't imagine a world where this isn't up for Best Picture as well as a number of other categories. Are you with me? Uh-oh, Brian's not with me.
I'm here.
Okay, there you are. All right, so yeah, that's we're very excited. We're all very excited. This is the only one that I think probably has the best shot of delivering on my list.
All right, Killers of the Flower Moon. I'm on board. You might hear about it later in my list. I didn't go chronological like you. I didn't have the discipline. Apologies. Number five for me. This might have been higher on my list years ago, but it's a director I broke it up with. We did it. That might be a good episode to update. Top five directors you've broken up with, because Michael Mann and I had a love affair that burned bright and hot for a number of years. But ever since Public Enemies, I never even saw Black Hat and Miami Vice. Fell off the Michael Mann train. But I bought a ticket for the train ride. I'm back on because he is directing Ferrari coming at Christmas Day, December 25th. Ferrari starring Adam Driver as the, wait for it, titular Enzo Ferrari. They did, you probably don't know this, you don't pay attention to things. Did Adam Driver get his ears fixed? Because he had giant ears. That's why he always had his hair so long in every single role. But here he's playing Enzo Ferrari, and the ears are tucked. So I'm curious if he got them fixed.
I don't know.
You wouldn't know.
I have no idea.
Penelope Cruz about... also in this. Shailene Woodley hopefully getting a nice rebound after Dumb Money in Ferrari. But yeah, this is the true story of Enzo Ferrari possibly tackling his. Are you familiar with the, you want to know the story of how Lamborghini came to be?
Yeah, I mean, I saw Ford versus Ferrari. There's a little bit of that story in there.
Is there?
And,
I don't remember that
a little
all.
Bit.
Okay. Anyway.
I thought there was some mention of it.
It might have been offhandedly mentioned. Yeah. Are you? Do you remember?
May have seen
story?
A doc. No. Is it scintillating? Do you want to retell it right now?
Because
I have a movie I'm planning on seeing December 25th that will probably shed some
probably
more light
will.
On
I'll
it.
Give you a 30-second version because it's funny. Ferrari. Enzo Ferrari was approached by a man named Lamborghini, who was a tractor maker, but it was also a
tractor. That's right.
But he's also an auto enthusiast. And Mr. Lamborghini said, "Hey, Mr. Ferrari," right? I didn't say it like that. He explained Enzo that there were some flaws in this car, and then Enzo, being a bit of a fan of his own materials. Said, "Get out of here, you bum. Who are you talking to? You're talking to Enzo Ferrari here." And he dismissed him, apparently, humiliatingly. And Lamborghini was so frustrated and offended that he decided to make his own supercars, which now, of course, are Lamborghini cars.
He must have sold a lot of tractors to be in a position where he could just...
I think he did really well with the tractors because he started to make supercars, and there you have it.
Yeah, I'm at the age with Atticus, my 6-year-old. He wants a Lamborghini, and I say, okay.
Oh, really?
You can start doing really, really well in school and start this dream now, because you're never going to see your dad driving a Lamborghini unless I live on a track or have access to a track. I'm not going to drive a Lamborghini around town. No, I'm not going to do that.
I never asked you this, but apropos to Lamborghinis. Let's say this next movie is just a cultural phenomenon. That's all I like to say.
If it is, then it'll be top on your list for the Vaulties.
Oh, no.
If it's
totally
a cultural
understood.
Phenomenon, then it becomes your favorite movie. That's how you're
operating. Let's say you rake in the bucks, and all of a sudden the Cowan family is worth a few million bucks. You got some disposable cash. What's your indulgent purchase? Is it a Lamborghini? Is it, what is it?
I really don't have anything. I don't have anything off the top of my head, other than just being out of debt would be nice. And
being able to travel.
I don't, nothing in hand.
Are you buying a boat?
A boat would be cool, I guess, but then it would be a headache. Like, who's going to maintain the boat? Where's the boat going to be? I don't like having stuff that I have to, like, you know, worry about. I don't like stuff.
What about like a home theater?
No, I like going to the theater and bitching about the people around me. Yeah, there's really, really not. I mean, you know what? A nice, like a really well put together office with all of the stuff that I can go in and sit down and just turn things on and go to work instead of
having to
move stuff around. I just want to be able to create and do work and do stuff effectively without having to move boxes and bikes. And because I do a lot of stuff in the garage out here, and it's a pain in the ass sometimes. I get good internet capability of this is the boringest answer ever of doing remote.
If you came into some millions, I'd upgrade my internet.
You know what I do? I'd
pay an extra $15 a month.
I'd make a movie. I got like 3 or 4 movies that I'd love to make that would take some good, you know, startup money. I'm doing that right now, thanks to our audience with one of them. But there's 3 or 4 other movies that I would love to make, and I'd probably throw some of my own money into like doing a concept piece or something on them. I'd probably do that. So much to my wife's chagrin, and travel, that kind of thing. What about you, Brad? Would you go out and buy a Lamborghini tractor?
I'd hire you as my assistant.
I mean, you joke, but I don't think it's that far from
a joke. That's not a joke.
I think you would absolutely
I'm sadly similar to you. Like, I wouldn't want like a supercar. Like, it just seems extraordinarily impractical and dangerous. Maybe a boat, only because it'd be fun for, you know, Tessa and her friends. It'd be a fun place to, you know, be social. But probably boring answer. You know, nicer house.
Your house is very nice.
It is nice, bigger. You know, we have the 2 bedrooms, so it'd be nice to have a little space.
I talk a big game. Who knows? You never know until you're actually in that position. And I like to think that I would want to give back and help out, and I think I probably would. I'd probably become, you know, involved in a whole lot of
start a foundation.
Yeah, I probably would, for, you know, like my Born to Act players that I love and that population, that community. I might like do some work with like shelters and animals. I don't know.
Up and coming filmmakers, you can be a kingmaker.
Fuck them. Most up and coming filmmakers are a horrible pain in the ass.
That's a really good point.
I know I was when I was an up and comer. I still am. All right. Ferrari. I have more to talk about Ferrari. We can do that later. Or you know what? In case I forget, because I am a little foggy right now, I see a lot of similarities with the House of Gucci and Ferrari. No?
Yeah. It's a very similar film. It's a very looking film.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Number 8 for me is a movie that this would probably be possibly my most anticipated, my most excited. I am very curious to see what Alexander Payne does with The Holdovers, which seems to be a very seems to possibly be a personal film for him. It's a period piece.
This is an also ran for me. I saw the trailer, and maybe you can't tell a lot from a trailer sometimes, but looks a little uninspired. I don't know. What do you think?
It feels like Alexander Payne doing Wes Anderson, but good.
Yes, I thought the same thing.
But good. So the story is, it's Paul Giamatti plays the curmudgeon-y old teacher. It's 1970, so it's a period piece. And he's at this like Ivy League type boarding school, you know, for kids that are shipped away. And he gets the babysitting duties for the Christmas holiday, and he has to stay at the school with the unfortunate few kids that don't have anywhere to go for the holidays. And other than Paul Giamatti, I don't know if I recognize a whole lot of other actors in this. Daveen Joy Randolph plays Mary Lamb, and she has a big role in it. But then there's a bunch of younger kids. And it's that age-old story where I'm afraid this might go astray. This is that age-old story where the old curmudgeon-y man gets stuck with like youth. And guess what? His heart melts, and he sees the errors of his own ways, and he has a big story arc. And it's all right there, and that's definitely going to be in there. But let's see what Alexander Payne does with it. And if anyone can make that interesting again, I think it is Alexander Payne. And it's the first time we've seen Alexander Payne do anything in the school setting since Election, right? So
that's true.
I am excited.
Do you think there's any rivalry between Wes Anderson and Alexander Payne? Because I'm watching the trailer early. Actually, it was playing for Bottoms earlier this week when I was watching it, and I was thinking, how has Wes Anderson not gotten his claws into Paul Giamatti? And I'm like, oh, I wonder if they're like in like separate camps.
Hmm. Interesting.
There's no proof of that.
I know there's a lot of crossover with audience. You know, a lot of cinephiles love both of them equally. Obviously, I'm a more of a way more of a Payne guy. I can even throw like David O. Russell's early work into similarities. And
David O. Russell, yeah.
So The Holdovers might very well be the one that I'm most excited for that doesn't have killers in the title.
Ooh.
Which you'll be talking about more later. Also, a lot of smoking in The Holdovers, and which makes me happy because it's a period piece. So that means it's honest. And it's
okay.
Written by David Hemmingson. So
I don't know the name. I don't know David.
Nor do I, and I'm not familiar with most of his stuff. But obviously he wrote something here that got Mr. Alexander Payne excited. So we'll see.
Not excited enough yet to take the helm.
We will see. Or it could just be, you know, it could be a little bit drab and dull, and who knows? What I'm most concerned or interested in is how he approaches this tropey storyline of the old curmudgeon having his heart melted by angsty youth, which we've seen way too many times. Okay.
Yeah. Hopefully it's a little more than it seems, because from the trailer, like I said, it seemed a little basic, but I have faith in Alexander Payne. Like I mentioned, it's my also rans.
It's ridiculous that it's on your also rans, Brian. But okay.
I don't think it is. Think
number seven for me is a movie. I should say, Holdovers comes out November 10th, just in time for the Thanksgiving holiday, where people all go home, and except for these kids that are in The Holdovers, because they are holdovers. So that'll be top of mind. And then we go on to a movie called American Fiction. I would be surprised if this one's on your list, Brian. It comes out November 17th. And it's from,
yeah, I love this.
It's a directorial debut from a guy who wrote on these three shows, Brian, which gives me big hope. He wrote on Master of None, which is a very, very good show that I watched.
Right.
The Watchmen and The Good Place. And his name is Cord Jefferson. And American Fiction is about author Thelonious Monk Ellison. He's peeved because his latest offering hasn't caught fire with publishers, while a tome called We's Live in the Ghetto by Sinatra Golden hits the bestseller list, leaving Monk seething. So it's going to be one of these.
Yeah, I came across this.
Stories that I think I will really latch onto and respond to, because I do get upset with a public at large when they respond to lesser works of art.
What was the one we liked, 4 years ago, that was the woman who was an author or a writer?
Yeah.
She was in New York, and they were talking about like slavery porn.
No, it was poverty porn.
Poverty porn.
Yeah, I can't recall the name of that. Don't put me on the spot right now. Like, it's because
I'm trying to remember.
It was a play on words of a bigger title. Oh, what's the name of that movie?
And she was a large black woman, but I don't know.
She was so good. She came from the stage, and I thought we'd be seeing a whole lot more of her, and we have not yet.
I don't even know what to search for. Like, you know what I mean?
We need to take a break so I can find this here shortly, but the Vaulties, because it was all my Vaulties.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Do you want to just jump to my number four and you can look?
Sure.
Unless you have more to say about
I didn't even go down the cast. So Jeffrey Wright plays Thelonious Monk Ellison, and this is from a beloved book that covers all of this. Cord Jefferson and Percival Everett. I'm not well versed in this book and this universe. I know that it's got a huge following, and I hope that the movie strikes a similar chord as the book did. So evidently it's fairly meta, and it's the I will learn more through this movie, but I have high hopes for American Fiction, is what it's called. Jeffrey Wright is always very good when he's cast properly. He will always be Basquiat to me, but looking forward to
Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah,
yes, he was Basquiat, but he has so many amazing roles.
But that was the first time I ever saw him, and I saw Basquiat numerous times, like in the theater. So he is always, I always see a little Basquiat in his performance. I always see it. Otherwise, yeah. You know, he's completely melds himself, melts into whatever character he's doing. But
speaking of the Wes Anderson camp, it's Jeffrey Wright, firmly entrenched.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I didn't want to say it, but I was saying, you know, when he is cast appropriately.
You know what? Even when he's inappropriately cast, he's still pretty good.
Yeah, he chews the scenery. What the? It's not showing up in my vaulties.
Take your time. I'm gonna do an inane soliloquy on number four. Number four for me, most anticipated film of the fall. This is a movie that you know what? Just a few years ago, had this come out, would not have made my list. I'd have been like, yeah, we'll see. But just based on how much I admired Bradley Cooper's last directorial effort, A Star is Born. I mean, it was a really good movie. I am intrigued about Maestro. Maestro is a biopic of Leonard Bernstein. And of course, this is directed by Bradley Cooper, starring Bradley Cooper as the, wait for it, titular maestro, Leonard Bernstein himself, also starring Carey Mulligan. This has a limited theatrical run coming out November 22nd. I think that is Thanksgiving weekend or maybe the beginning of four. This led Netflix on December 20th. So the world will see Maestro on December 20th.
I'm so glad that you uncovered that because I have not. Okay. Yeah, this probably should be on my list as well, Brian. What I was reading was that they were... recently, they were talking about maybe pushing this to next year, but it looks like I'm wrong in that information. So, yeah, this is one that
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm totally capable of being wrong about any of this, but what I saw is 11/22 in theaters and 12/20 on Netflix.
And at the very least, it's going to let everyone, many more people understand, and myself included, because, you know, I was taught Leonard Bernstein in film school and I learned about his contributions, but you're going to know a whole lot more about him once you've seen this movie. And there's some controversy with this movie too. People have been complaining about him wearing a prosthetic nose because he's Jewish and they're saying that he's Jewing it up is what's being said. And I've heard both camps, both sides argue this in various ways. And it's a discussion. I can see how some people would be upset, but they're missing the point, I think. He's trying to look like the man. He's not trying. He obviously, I would imagine, has a great respect and admiration for the man, I'm talking about Bradley Cooper now, for him to want to bring him to life and bring him to the big screen and bring him into many people's minds by doing this movie. And he wanted to look like the man. He didn't say, hey, you know what we could do that'd be really funny too, is if we really made him look more Jewish. Like that's not what's going through this guy's head. So I want to think it'd be a long con if that's what he's doing, if this whole point of making this awards baity movie, right, this prestige film, and the whole point is so that he can knock him down a peg by making him look absurdist with absurd.
Many decades from now, if there is an Adrian Brody biopic or a Adam Driver biopic, you're going to have to do some prosthetics, most likely, for an actor to look like him, whether or not he's Jewish. You're right. He's playing a known character and a known person and trying to look that person. If Bradley Cooper or anyone was just being a random Jew, for laughs or for whatever, yes, that'd be problematic. But he's playing a person who has a distinctive look. I don't see the problem here.
And they do nose work all the time.
Of course.
A lot of the time it's subtle, but a lot of the greatest performance we've seen is because they do subtle little like bridge nose work and makeup to make the actor look slightly different. And all you have to do is a little tweak of the nose and it makes you look different. And if you look at the trailer and you look at what Bradley Cooper did with Maestro, it's not like it's some giant honking beezer he's putting on there. So
if I had never heard of this and I saw the trailer, I don't know that I would notice the fact that his nose was not Bradley Cooper's. You know what I mean? It's bigger, but it's not like Bradley Cooper has a distinctive button nose and it's distracting.
But if some people are hurt by this and offended by this and take it the wrong way, I'm sorry. I feel bad for them because they're going to probably miss a bigger picture, which is hopefully a very good movie. So I can't find my Vaulties, Brian. I can't. I'm looking at the master list, and according to my master list, we've never done the Vaulties, which is the name of that movie?
Are you just talk about your next films, and I will attempt to uncover the wall of these.
You think you can? All right, here we go.
Well, after I have my list, I'll hope it's in there somewhere.
But I don't think it was on your Vaulties, was it?
I don't think it was, but I always write down, at least when I'm culling the master list for the Vaulties, we start with all the movies I liked from that year, so it will almost assuredly be there. This was 4 or 5 years ago, right?
I want to say probably 3 or 4 years ago, yeah.
Okay, let's start with 2020.
All right, here we go. Number six for me is Napoleon. It's a pretty easy one to have on the list. Evidently, in reading about this, Ridley Scott's Napoleon, which has no connection to Stanley Kubrick's Napoleon, unfortunately, that one is continuing.
It's the manifestation.
No, it's worse. It's much worse than that as far as me being a Kubrick lover and what I'm about to say. No, this has nothing to do with, as far as I can tell, he didn't even access any of Kubrick's notes on Napoleon.
No!
Just in case you might not know, Kubrick was kind of driven insane by his obsession of Napoleon and trying to do right by him by making a feature-length film about Napoleon. And he actually did Barry Lyndon as almost a test for what he wanted to do ultimately with Napoleon, and anyone who got to see the Kubrick exhibit saw his research.
I saw that
room.
His filing cabinet.
It was decades long of him just mulling over, poring over everything he could find about Napoleon, and I think part of it drove him a little bit mad. When I tell you that Ridley Scott did not access any of that, from my understanding, he had no access to it because there's a man named Steven Spielberg who was planning on making this into a mini series using Kubrick's. No, do not say yeah like that because it hurts me. He's using Kubrick's work, all of his hard work, to put together a miniseries. I wonder if miniseries ever even occurred to Stanley back in the day. I don't think so, because Roots was kind of the first one to really come along, and he was doing all of this before. I don't think that was even an option in his mind to do a miniseries, which might have cured him, might have given him the ability to actually pull the trigger and do Napoleon the way that he felt needed to be done. But here we are with Ridley Scott's Napoleon, written by David Scarpa. And of course, it's starring Joaquin Phoenix as Brian. Go ahead. You can say the titular if you like. No, I just said it. Sorry, too late.
Yeah.
And Vanessa Kirby, who plays a large role in this story as Empress Josephine. You might know Vanessa Kirby as the other, the sister in The Crown. She's fantastic.
She was Pieces of a Woman. That was not a pleasant film, but she was great.
She's very, very good. And then we have.
Did you see that? You must have saw that.
I can't remember. I don't think I did. I think
that's the one where she has the stillborn baby. The baby.
I did not.
And what's his face? Shia LaBeouf is the husband.
I did not endure. No.
It's not fun, but it's good.
I'm all right. And Ben Miles is in this as well. So that's Napoleon. Napoleon gets released to all of us to go enjoy November 22nd, Brian. The same weekend as Maestro. So we got a couple biopics. Yeah.
Although we might see a couple of those in their limited theatrical runs. So perhaps we'll have a week or two early.
And then number five. And then number five for me, before Brian hopefully comes up. What is it called, Brian?
I'm searching. I'm fucking haystack needling it.
There's a man, a director named Jeff Nichols, who has made some very interesting movies, going back to Take Shelter, which you and I both enjoyed quite a bit. He's also did something called Mud, which you and I enjoyed quite a bit. Midnight Special, not as much, but it was interesting. It was almost like the origin story of Cyclops from X-Men, but that's not officially what it was. And then his most recent 2016 movie was called Loving, which was all about the racism that was and the landmark case about mixed couples. And I did not love Loving. It was slow, plodding, depressing. Didn't have a whole lot to hang my hat on. I understand the message, but it wasn't the type of movie that I got pumped up about to recommend to others. However, here he is all these years later, and Mr. Jeff Nichols, who is a very, very good filmmaker as far as I can tell. He's got one called The Bike Riders, and it's about little kids learning to ride bikes, which looks really cute.
Yes. I know. It's a heartwarming.
No, it's a very different story, in fact. I'm sorry, I got that confused. No, this is the rise of a Midwestern motorcycle club through the lives of its members, and it is an ensemble cast, to say the least.
It is all my ulcer-in, so please regale us.
I'll just give you the three leads. These are guys that are going to be bikers, I would imagine. That's Mr. Austin Butler, who might still be doing Elvis. We'll have to wait and see. We got a guy named Michael Shannon, who plays Zipco. Zipco. Michael Shannon will be forever known as Zipco if he pulls off this. Can you imagine just how great of a performance he'd have to do in this for us to like always think of him as Zipco? But you never know.
That's impossible.
You never know. And then we have a guy named Tom Hardy. I don't know if you're familiar with Tom Hardy.
No, is he on cover?
He is my favorite living human being, I think, as far as people that are on screens. Wow. I love this man. I love Tom Hardy so much, and he plays Johnny, one of the bikers. Toby Wallace is also in it. He plays the kid. You and I loved Toby Wallace in Baby Teeth. We saw him in Baby Teeth earlier this year. A listener assigned us Baby Teeth, and if you recall, it was that story about the girl who was sick, and she had the parents who knew she was sick. She didn't have a whole lot longer to live, and she had an older boyfriend. And the parents kind of had to like go along with it because they knew that this was her only chance at knowing what love was. And
Indeed. And
Toby Wallace played the older boyfriend, and he kind of stole the movie for me in a lot of ways, that Baby Teeth. So he's going to be in this as well. It just looks very promising, very, very promising. The Bike Riders. And that comes out December 1st.
Yes.
Yes.
All Alcerans. I'm very glad you have it. Damn it, I can't find the movie. I'm this close to just Googling giant black woman who's a
Brian. Movie. She's not that big.
She was so big.
All right, I recall she
was pretty big.
Go ahead with your number three.
And there's Pieces of Woman. There you go. Look at the 2021 Vaulties. All right, you're back on it because I'm doing number three. What's my number three? Where is it? Oh, there's the aforementioned Killers of the Flower Moon. Anticlimactic, but yes, three hours plus. This is a epic movie.
Got it.
You Google giant black woman right in the movie?
I said movie making fun of poverty porn. That's all I have to put in.
Nice.
Which is not the most eloquent Google search I've ever done, but the 40-year-old version.
Yes, you're
so
right.
So good.
That. The title.
Oh, I you know what? If I was the type to be crazy, I would flog myself. I would be flogging myself for my own ineptitude of not being able to remember that title, because that's a title.
No, I disagree. You did good by remembering that it was like an ape on some other title.
It was what? Yeah.
God damn it. I was just looking. Fuck.
Yeah, it's definitely, I knew that it was a play on words, and that's what kind of got me, because a play on words of what? The 40-year-old version. And it's Rada Blank. Rada Blank crushed it. What has Rada Blank done? She directed it, wrote it, and started it. What's your problem?
I was on the right email when I was looking up. I thought I was maybe I'm thinking of Ending Things. I'm like, is that the movie I'm thinking of? Because I'm looking at the 2021 Vaulties, and it's right there, and I just glossed right over it.
No one cares. You know what she's been in? So she in we're talking about Rada now. She was in Mixing Nia in 1998. And that was her first film role. And then she was in a TV series called Timeless, one episode in 2018. And then in 2020, she played Rada herself in the 40-year-old version, which I should go back and watch again. It's so good, guys. And she's been in nothing since and has nothing on. She's mainly known for being on stage. I think she's a stage performer primarily. And I got to hope she's out there working because she's so good. And
she was really good.
I want to watch the 40-year-old version right now. Not virgin, version.
She's gigantic.
Is it streaming? She's not that big, Brian. What are you talking about?
I'm joking. Is it streaming? Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Oh, it is? All right.
Sure is.
Well, while you wait for the fall movies to come out, you can watch the 40-year-old version. There is so much to love in that movie. I'm glad that we came up with the title before this.
Good for you. No, you 100% you.
I feel like I feel like I'm comatose. I do not feel good, Brian. The show must go on.
The only thing I have to add to Killers of Flower Moon, this is the final film, obviously, that Scorsese and Robbie Robertson collaborated on. He, the member of the band, and scored many of Scorsese's films, and he died recently. So we'll look forward to his final score, as it were, for Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Very good. Very good. All right, Brian. Let's take a quick break, talk a little Amazon purchases, and then come back with our top most anticipated or latest in the year movies, as my list goes.
Let's do it. Time to run down the interesting and notable Amazon purchases of the week. Shout out and thank you to everyone who, buys their things and they just don't get mentioned, toilet paper and fucking, flour for your baking or whatever it is. Might not get mentioned here, but we do appreciate it. All adds up. And even though it literally might get us a couple of pennies, enough people buy toilet paper and that helps the show. So thank you. The big purchase of the week, an Ego Power Plus self-propelled snowblower. That's a very smart purchase here at the tail end of September, as it were, because we got the snow season coming up in much of the country. And appreciate you thinking ahead and thinking of us. Makes a big difference, and we appreciate you. Oh, there's the purchase on the Amazon banner. Oh, got the music. I'm just going to nail it without even thinking about it. Dream Tech Robot Vacuum and Mop Combo. 2, Amazon Reloads. You can reload your Amazon account. Someone did it in the, it might have been the same person. Could have been different people. Either way, it totaled up to an oddly specific amount of $439.02. So thank you for reloading your Amazon account.
Maybe they're trying to round it out. Maybe they're trying to make it a round number.
Oh, top it off. Yeah, exactly. All right. I like that. Yeah, they spent, whatever it was that made up $500. Magic the Gathering Masters Commander deck bundle was purchased. Someone got a deluxe edition of The Who's Next and Lifehouse. That's 10 discs. That is a very elaborate box set. Very good looking. I must admit I explored that when I saw them on the list. Smith Soundtrack Active Sunglasses. A Shurion 3-year lawn and garden protection plan. Wonder what has to happen to make that pay off. 2, Swidget Smart Home Control Switches. New Balance V5 sneakers. Got to make sure it's not an S, but it's a 5. Texas Instruments TI-84 Plus Calculator. Guess they're still making those. Good for them. Mortal Kombat 1 Premium Edition for PlayStation 5. 4, Closet Organizer Storage Bins were picked up. Someone got themselves Drinkwell Pagoda Pet Fountain. This is hurtful. Nutrafol hair growth supplements. Let me know if they work. Merrill hiking boots were picked up. Someone got light band personal LED headlamp. Japanese meditation floor chair with back support. That's important. 10,000 shipping labels by 10UP. Appreciate you for putting those on your pizzas. Western Legends for PSP was purchased, as well as 2 Lennox Merv 11 air filters, Mule shaving razor, punch-free retractable baby gate. Scott toilet paper. Thank you, whoever you are, getting Scott toilet paper. Camco Taste Pure drinking water hose. And finally, purchased by some faithful listener of the show. Someone's making old fashions. They got an Angostura aromatic cocktail bitters. Crucial ingredient in that old-fashioned drink.
Here are the movies that were clicked through since the last time I talked at you. Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion. Do you remember, Brian, when that was one of your 3 movies that you would refer to?
I know. It's funny. Leaned on it in a while.
That was a go-to for Brian. Pretty much any list we do, we do like top 5 explosions. Somehow we'd get Romy and Michelle in there.
There was explosive moments when Roman yelled at Michelle. I'm going to try and work that into this episode. I'll preview.
See if you can do it. End of Watch was clicked through, as well as Summertime, Disobedience, Ammonite. I don't know. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. You remember that story last year? It became kind of a big story for a minute because Winnie the Pooh became a public domain, so you can do whatever you like with Winnie the Pooh now. Saw a fascinating thing, I think it was on Last Week Tonight, about how technically Mickey Mouse should be in the public domain now, which obviously Disney is terrified of, but they have such a team of lawyers that they continue to somehow have him not in the public domain.
I've heard that. I didn't see the episode, but they've carved out exceptions and like, oh, if it's still being used or
something. What they're suggesting is the original Steamboat Willie is in public domain, but it's so different from what he's evolved into, so you can't touch the new one. So you know, John Oliver and company are having some fun with the old Steamboat Willie. They've been actually incorporating him into their show on a weekly basis.
I got to re-up on that one.
Well, I mean, the show's not on right now because of the strike.
I know, I'm behind. I haven't seen this episode. I haven't seen any of the episodes.
Talk to Me was clicked through. A lot of interesting theories and discussions were emailed to me about Talk to Me. It's a different movie, bro. Yeah. Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. Hey, I still got to flick fest that one, and I will eventually. It has not been discussed on this here program. I'm not doing that, but there is some interesting stuff to talk about with the Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Hey, did you know that Benny Safdie's in that?
No, not at all.
Yeah, he... It Ain't Over was clicked through, as well as Carmen and Lola. Barbie was clicked through. I guess Avery's already on that, on top of that. East of Eden, which you've not seen. It's one of James Dean's three roles, and he is bizarre in that movie. You would not expect it. Everyone knows him for Rebel Without a Cause, but my favorite is Giant and then East of Eden. He's very good in East of Eden. He's kind of a creep. He is a creep, I should say. Oh. And then finally, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse was clicked through. So thank you very much for everyone who clicks through us when you're watching a movie. It makes a different one penny at a time. It helps us fund the show. And yeah, and you know what? I might as well say that. Say this while I'm here. If you're listening, you're obviously an ardent listener, or you just can't get to the fast forward button. But if you would like to help out the show, just as far as getting growth and letting others know who might enjoy it as much as you guys do, just giving it a rating really helps. And you know, telling your friends about it or sharing in some of our posts about it, like, hey, I learned this on this show here. This is a show that's been going on for a long, long time, and maybe you haven't heard of it. To your friends, your family, especially grandmas. If you have a grandma, I think she'd really like the cut of our jib.
Big amongst grandmas.
But just something as simple as going on your little app there, whatever, wherever you're listening to this podcast, and giving us a star rating or even a little written review, good or bad. Obviously, we like them more when they're good, but that does help the overall cause for keeping the Film Vault going. Because now that I'm doing, you know, all of this other stuff, you know, now that my six-year-old is in school and I have a little bit more time to actually be productive. Not that I haven't been productive this whole time, but I've been stay-at-home dad guy for the last going on 7 years. You know,
you've been productive. You've produced a great son.
Thank you, sir. He's okay. I'm doing real estate daily, you know, showings, talking to clients, doing open houses. I'm doing all of that all the time. And this movie is taking tons and tons of time. So I am actively, you know, tracking how much time I spend on everything. And I put in 20 hours a week on the Film Vault. And that has been become quite apparent over the last 3 weeks as, you know, my time is going into these other things as well. So I can't speak for you, Brian, but, you know, you guys that help the show go, and with whether it's reviews or clicking through or Patreon, it won't continue without that kind of help. So I just won't be able to justify, you know, spending 20 hours to do this show.
And so I'll make up for it
when I have all these other things going on. So yeah, why don't you just make up for it, Brian?
Yeah, I'll pick up the slack on the other end. In all seriousness, yeah, the Anderson's right. Thank you guys for supporting the show, whatever way you support the show, whether it's just, you know, telling someone about it, saying, hey, I heard about this great movie from the Film Vault, tapping the Amazon banner. All those things are free, and they help us. So appreciate you.
And I know we're out there. Recently, I had to do some digging for something else. I was looking for another film podcast or something, and I was on some message boards looking for film podcasts. And the Film Vault did have a lot of representation. There's a lot of, you know, the Film Vault like lists like a good film podcast to listen to, and the Film Vault did show up a number of times, which I was happy, very happy about. But we are still very small considering how long we've been doing this show. We still are a very small group, and I'd have to think there's a whole lot of other people like you who are listening right now who would also enjoy this show and get something out of this show.
Are you talking to me? Because I enjoy the show.
I'm not talking to you who are also listening, Brian, but I'm talking to the people that are listening to my words right now. So
that makes more sense.
I think it's the cold talking for me. I feel like I've been taken over, much like Malignant, which we'll be watching later this week. And I'm going to shut up now. Let's get back to the program.
Good. Yeah, back to the show.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, Matt, did you know that wombats poop cubes?
Nope, never heard that before.
Did you know the unicorn is the national animal of Scotland, Ken?
I didn't know, nor do I care.
Neil, did you know that Liechtenstein is the only doubly landlocked country in Europe?
Jeff, isn't that an American pop artist?
Well, actually, it's both. If you want to learn things like that and more, join us each week on Triviality, a pub trivia-style game show podcast where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Listen in each week to answer general knowledge trivia alongside exciting guests from around the world.
And we're here too.
Join us every Tuesday for new hour-long episodes of Triviality, plus tons of extra theme content on everything from The Office and Lord of the Rings to science and geography.
And sometimes we even do sports.
Find us on all your preferred podcast apps and take part in the fun of playing bar trivia without the need to wear pants.
Real mature, Jeff.
Forget it, Neil. It's Triviality.
Let's finish up our list of the most anticipated films this fall, perhaps. Number 3 and 4 for you?
Let me get at it. Let me get after it. Where are we at? Number three and four for me. Number 4 for me is going to push me to watch. I can promise you this. I will be watching Shinzilla, or Shin Godzilla, as it's called. As it may be called, before December 1st, because I need to watch the only other Japanese-produced modern-day Godzilla movie is Shinzilla, and then we got Godzilla Minus One coming out December 1st. And I'm excited. This one looks like they might know what they're doing and might make something very, very enjoyable to watch. Takashi Yamazaki directed and wrote this one. I'm sad to say that I'm not familiar with anything that he has done. However, this trailer looks like a whole lot of fun, and I'm a Godzilla fan. I'm just always deeply disappointed with every production I see. So I'm hoping
it's true. I have like slight nostalgia for the 1998 Godzilla. Like, as bad as it is, it was still kind of fun.
I don't even remember. Is that the one?
Matthew Broderick movie.
Yeah, where there was a whole, it was his big return. He hadn't been around for a while.
The billboards were fantastic. Remember those around town?
And that was the one with like Puff Daddy did the soundtrack, yeah, right? And it had that riff, that song.
Hank Azaria was great in that movie. Like, it's not good. I can't defend it, but it's fun, and it's enjoyable on a weird level.
Shin Godzilla, Brian. I need to watch that. I need to watch it sooner than later. So I will be watching that before before December 1st, which is when Godzilla Minus One comes out. And the title is referencing what I think it's quite apparent that Godzilla was kind of born out of the atrocities of the end of World War II, yes, with the bombs being dropped on Japan, and creators, you know, came up with Godzilla after that as a bit of an analogy to what they had just been through. And now this is taking that concept head on, and it's supposed to be after the war. Japan is already at its low point with the bombs being dropped, and then they go minus one as the country gets knocked down another level with the appearance of Godzilla. So they got their work cut out for them there in Japan in this rendition of Godzilla Minus One.
You know, I just realized, like, I have no, when I was a kid, I didn't care about what most young boys cared about, which is like giant trucks and like excavators and, you know, all that shit. Like, I didn't really care. But like, my version of that was like Optimus Prime and Godzilla. Like, I think I mentioned on the show before, when I was a kid, like a little kid, like probably eight or nine ish. I was really into those schlocky horror movies. I saw all the Godzilla movies, King Kong, the horror films in addition to that. But like, that was like my version of being obsessed with these large, you know, larger than life machines, was like being obsessed with Godzilla. And these weren't great movies. Like, I saw the black and white films before, you know, I was probably even old enough to really understand, like you said, you know, it's a commentary on the nuclear fallout from Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But to me, it was just like, yeah, giant, you know, a giant lizard, you know, breaking up the city.
Yeah, yes.
Here. I digress.
You did. You digressed quite a bit there.
Bit of a digression there. Can I go to number two, or is that just your number four?
That's my number four. Number three for me is Poor Things. Yorgos is also doing something that looks like Wes Anderson, but well, with Poor Things, if you look at that. Right. That comes out December 8th, I should say. Very bizarre trailer. Yorgos is really off the deep end here, doing what he does best, which is fantasy and absurdist. And it's his version of Frankenstein.
This could be unwatchable.
It could be. It's hard to tell. It's Emma in small and short bursts doing this bizarre childlike Frankenstein female. I'm not buying it, but maybe over the long haul, it's a 2-hour and 21-minute movie. Maybe, you know, she will earn some of these things that she's doing. You'd have to imagine she will, because Yorgos is great and Emma is one of the best. So hoping for really big things here with Poor Things. This is one that's been kicked down. I think originally it was supposed to come out in September, though, so that could be a problem. But yeah, this might be Atlas.
Atlas Shrugged?
Or no.
Cloud Atlas.
Cloud Atlas. Or what's that other one that where he's rollerblading through the universe?
Jupiter Ascending.
Yes. I mean, it could be that, where he's swinging for the fences so far and everyone's on board, but it just doesn't work. This looks like it could be that, but hopefully not. But yeah, this is even more Wes Anderson than the Holdovers, looks like. And then we got the old Mark Ruffalo in here as well, who has got to be one of my favorites, as well as Willem Dafoe, who plays the doctor.
Tom Hardy, but he's pretty good.
Oh, I love that Ruffalo. Ruffalo is fantastic. But even like some of the lines that are supposed to be funny in this aren't really, the trailer is not doing a whole lot for me. I'm going purely off of names here and what I expect from these names. Yes.
Understood. Hey, I'm glad you mentioned Swinging for the Fences. So my number two, you mentioned before, but I am excited for this because this director, he swings big. And sometimes it's, you know, it's a whiff. Sometimes it's an infield fly. But sometimes that ball goes over the fence for a home run. I'm hoping for that for Napoleon by Ridley Scott in theaters on November 22nd. The biopic, the long-awaited biopic of Napoleon, with, yes, of course, Joaquin Phoenix, Vanessa Kirby, and this will eventually be streaming on Apple TV Plus. This is an Apple TV production, apparently, and we'll be able to stream that at some point. But I'll be seeing this in the largest format possible, because it's an epic. You know,
it's an epic
throwback
bio
movie. It's an epic movie. It's a throwback to movies, how they used to make them. I do fear you know, Christopher Nolan notwithstanding, you know, when we lose Ridley Scott, the man's got to be 80 years old at this point. When we lose Ridley Scott, there's going to be a real generational divide, right? Because he's like a holdover to those epic, you know, sword and sandal movies. Not even sword and sandal, just epic in scope. Even like his Blade Runners and his Black Hawk Downs. These are epic in scope just because they're not, you know, set in, you know, Macedonia or what have you. I'm excited for the return of that kind of movie in Napoleon.
I agree. Everything you just said, Brian, I agree with. Understood. I agree with it. Understood.
I know you're not feeling great, but I'm picking up the slack here. I'm getting used to it.
Yeah. Take over for what I normally do, which is now, take over.
I have to say, my number one, which I'll get to after you get to yours, obviously, date-wise, what is far, far past by your list, right? Like you would have passed over it and you didn't mention it, which is shocking to me. So we're going to have a discussion here in a minute.
Hmm.
Maybe you missed it. Maybe you don't count it because it's a Netflix movie. Or
yeah, I think that's, I think you're onto something there. There's a couple that are on my also rants that one is because it comes out tomorrow. So by the time this is released, it's already come out. And then one is because it's straight to Netflix. And I feel like I've kind of learned my lesson with that. So I didn't feel comfortable putting it on the list, but right. It's one that we thought was coming out a few weeks ago, but then it got pushed or
maybe.
All right. Number two for me, this is the one that I was talking about early in the program about how I probably will not have The Boy and the Heron on my list. Were we doing this just last year? This is Hayao Miyazaki's, I think it's officially his last film, but I, you know, I don't really believe that either when people say that they're retiring, but who knows? Hayao might be true in saying that this is his last film, but it is from the Ghibli studios. And I can't speak for you, Brian, but I've fallen in love with all this work and everything that I've seen this year. And they continue to come on the list. We'll be watching more before the year's over. But I've seen the Nausicaa in the theater and at home just this year. Obviously, I already love Spirited Away and Ponyo to a lesser extent.
But I'm intrigued.
I am finally on board with everything that this director does and the studio does and just this type of animation, which I resisted for decades. And I've finally seen the way. So he's got a new one coming out, The Boy and the Heron, December 8th. And even if it's just average for him, it's going to surpass pretty much everything else that I've seen animation-wise this year, with the exception of maybe like Spider-Verse. That's what my gut tells me just from everything that I've seen of his. So,
all right.
Yeah. Totoro. I saw Totoro, My Neighbor Totoro, earlier this year. The listeners have been adamant about getting us to see what we've been missing, and they have cracked. They've gotten through the wall, our stubborn wall, Brian.
Stubborn wall.
Stubborn wall of defiance and saying, no, that animation is not for me. I don't like Sailor Moon.
That's right. They've worn us down.
Yes, they have. Attrition has occurred. And then finally, my number one is Ferrari, coming out Christmas Day. Michael Mann's Ferrari. It looks like Michael Mann is back to making like an actual movie that he cares about and not trying to, you know, explore and experiment with the medium. I'm thinking that it's going to be a straightforward biopic, and he's got a great story to work with here, so hopefully he doesn't try and do anything that he doesn't need to, which is what he's done in the past, where I think he's kind of lost me, but not. I'm hoping Ferrari delivers. So that's my number one, because it comes out latest in the year for me.
Number one for me. I'm shocked this isn't on your list. We're going to have a conversation about this. I after a decade and a half of just almost interrupted brilliance of directed films, David Fincher had a string of films that I found less than inspiring. I know some people love Gone Girl. I know some people love The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I don't know if anyone loves Mank, but for me, they were all versions of, all right, there's moments, there's elements, I see my beloved David Fincher in there. I know he's in there somewhere, but he's bridled, he's held back, something's going on. And I'm hoping against hope, I'm ready to get my heart hurt again, Anderson, for The Killer, coming out limited theatrical release October 27th, streaming on Netflix November 10th, written by wait for it, Andrew Kevin Walker. Yes, the writer of Seven and the director of Seven, reteaming again, starring Michael Fassbender as, according to the credits, he's simply known as The Killer. And this is based on a series of French comic books. Not at his prime, at his best. And I'm including Christopher Nolan, I'm including Denis Villeneuve, everyone. No one does, for me, the combination of action, but the action is like blowing up stuff, but like kinetic, like action that grabs you, and that dramatic narrative combined, as well as David Fincher. He's a master of his craft, and I hope this finds him killing it. No pun intended.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I didn't realize it was getting limited release, and I think they're just doing that to make it eligible, if it is worthy of being eligible. But I'm just my expectations are tempered because of the Netflix thing with established directors.
It's not promising. But that said, you never know. Fincher's a mercurial guy, apparently, and maybe he's just like, hey, this is the movie I want to make, and Netflix is giving me a bunch of money, so damn the torpedoes.
All right. I hope you're right. And yeah, it just fell off the list. I could have thrown it on there, but I just didn't feel... I'm hoping that Murphy's Law proves me right, and by keeping it off, and then I'm wrong about the movie. You know what I mean?
Did you like or love any of those movies that I mentioned, Gone Girl or Girl with the Dragon Tattoo or
no.
Mank?
No, they didn't have what I love about Finch. They didn't draw me in the same way that all of his earlier stuff did. And it kind of felt like, you know, I have talked about this before, and I hate to say it, but it kind of felt like he was just, you know, going along with some of these things. You know, they're good movies. He knows how to make a really good movie. It just didn't feel like there's a whole lot of passion behind them. It felt like he was almost a hired hand.
A little bit mailed in. But there's moments. Like, there's moments in Gone Girl, and there's moments in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and I don't know about Mank, but, you know, there's you can see the brilliance wanting to get out.
And, yeah, I am very interested to see with them being reteamed, because I love Andrew's other work. I mean, Andrew Kevin Walker, he did 8mm, which I absolutely love. I know you don't. I liked Sleepy Hollow quite a bit. He wrote that. And we'll be watching Metalocalypse later, and this week, I think. And he's written some of the stories on Metalocalypse, too. So,
oh, really? I
know that. He is one of the main writers on Metalocalypse. So he's a disturbed individual, and I like it when he pours his brain out onto the page, and then it comes to life on the screen.
Well, I'm in for whatever this is. I'm willing to admit this movie could be bad. This could be The Snowman, but I'm hoping against hope.
Oh, and you know what else he wrote? Oh, Bad Traveling, Love, Death, and Robots. Traveling.
Andrew Kevin Walker wrote that.
Yes,
because Fincher obviously directed it.
I must have known that. Yeah, so they have reteamed since Seven. So here we go. Okay. All right, that's two for two. That's two for two, Brian. Oh.
Do we complete the trifecta?
Do I need to redo my list now? Because that Bad Traveling. If you have not seen Love, Death, and Robots, Bad Traveling, I think it was Rand that brought it to my attention. He's like, dude, I know you're not going to watch all Love, Death, and Robots every single episode, but they're all standalones. Watch the one that Fincher directed, and my God, does it stick out.
It does.
So good.
That is amongst the most memorable television I've seen in many years.
Well, Seven is rated 8.6 with that team up, and then he went on and he wrote things that without Fincher directing, like The Wolfman, which is 5.8 on IMDb, Nerdland, which is 5.3 on IMDb, and then Love, Death, and Robots, he teams up again with Mr. Fincher, and it's an 8.4. and then The Killer so far is a 7.4. it's still very early. It's only, you know, getting reviews from people who saw it at festivals, I would imagine. But 7.4 as we speak these words. All right. You ready for a little listener list?
If you got a list, I want to hear it.
I do. Avery has forwarded it. And here is the listener list. Number five, there's a three-way tie with The Exorcist Believer, a movie called Napoleon, which has been discussed. And then here's the one that I'm talking about that comes out tomorrow, and that is the Toxic Avenger remake. which is very interesting and would have absolutely made my list if it wasn't coming out before this episode is released. Mm. That is directed by our boy, Macon Blair. Macon Blair not only directed it, but he also wrote it along with Joe Ritter and Lloyd Kaufman, of course, gets credit for being one of the creators of The Toxic Avenger. I was never a fan of any of the trauma stuff, including Toxic Avenger. That's probably the one that's most accessible. Way back in I think it was 84 or something when it came out. And I saw it for sure, but I it did not get me excited like it obviously did get Macon Blair and many other people excited. So very excited to see what Macon Blair does with Toxic Avenger. This is starring Jacob Tremblay, Elijah Wood, and Kevin Bacon. And Peter Dinklage is also in here. Macon Blair is also in this movie, his own movie as well. So this could be a whole lot of fun. It depends on just how far they go with the schmaltz and the cheese and the B-movie aspect, if they're going to try and recreate some of that. I have a feeling that this one's going to be a lot of fun. I hope to see it before we record next week, but I don't know if that will be possible. It's playing limited. All right.
It'll be hard to get hold of. This is the listener's tie for number five.
Tie for number five, along with The Exorcist and Napoleon. And then number four is The Creator, which is also on my also-rans. It's coming out fairly soon as well.
Does it come out? Oh, it's next week, I think.
It looks interesting. For sure, the trailer makes it look like it could be good. It's impossibly long. And
is it really?
We will see. I think it's over 220 or something. The Killer is number three on the listener list. And then number two is Poor Things. Look at that. They're taking the... They're excited about Yorgos. As am I. We'll see. That trailer concerns me. And then number one is Killers of the Flower Moon. So, yes. Brian also runs.
I'm looking at what comes out this week, and it looks like it's going to be a, listener assignment a week, because we got another couple weeks till The Creator, which I am excited to see. It's I'm at least intrigued. I don't know if excited is the word, but I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll give that a shot.
Gareth Edwards directing, and it's 2 hours, 13 minutes, which, you shouldn't. I'm guilty of that. I'll look at the runtime too often. The PG-13 has me concerned as well, and it just seems like a story we've seen and heard before. It seems like something that Blomkamp would have directed 10 years ago. You know what I mean? I don't know if we need to see this story again where there's only one hope and it's a child and the robots are taking over and it's a dystopian future. It just seems very paint by numbers. That's my concern. Sure. I could be wrong. And John David Washington just gives me peace when he's on screen.
He's a great movie star. He's a great screen presence. I agree.
So we will be watching this one. We will be covering it. Allison Janney is always solid, but I don't have huge hopes for it.
Yeah, guarded optimism. All right, yeah. I realized that I painted myself into a bit of a corner here, and I screwed myself because years ago, did you ever see a Hunger Games movie?
Like the original, yeah.
Okay, well,
I think I saw the sequel.
All of them, and the entire time I'm screaming inside my head, and also on this podcast. The Hunger Games is less interesting to me than what came before The Hunger Games. Like, how do we get here? Why are we nominating kids to kill each other? Like, that is interesting to me. Like, how we got into this dystopian future. Well, that prequel is coming out.
Oh, okay.
Prequel to The Hunger Games coming out.
Interesting.
And so I feel like I don't want to see it, but I feel like I have to because I've been screaming about how much better this would be. So I've screwed myself. I'll be seeing The Hunger Games prequel.
No, you're right, though. That's the interesting part. It's like, how does society get so far down the wrong path that we got to nominate children to kill each other?
Like,
so,
Katniss Everdeen, shooting an arrow at other kids is interesting, I guess, but I want to know.
But it's very PG-13. It's very pulled back. It's very, pulling all sorts of punches.
Sure,
it didn't feel authentic.
This is for 14-year-old girls.
Yeah. Not to be dismissive, but that's, quite obviously the studio's play when putting this thing together. And it could have been so much more. But, what I'm saying is that they didn't make it for me. They made it for another audience. And it annoys me. I want them to make this for me.
Already mentioned the holdovers and the bike riders. Wish looks good. The new Pixar movie, Dream Scenario with Nicolas Cage. Have you seen the trailer for this?
No, I don't watch trailers.
Okay, fun trailer. He looks great. He plays a chubby bald man. Next Goal Wins. I know you're at least intrigued. May December, about an aging film actress played by Julianne Moore. Pain Hustlers. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah, this is where we get in trouble too, because some of these that are on our also rans might be way better than any of the movies that are on our.
Oh yeah, I totally brushed list. Over like May, December, or Pain. It could be the best movie of the year.
Next Goal Wins is Taiki Waititi, and it's a story of an actual American Samoa soccer team that was just awful, I guess, at the 2001 FIFA match. I don't remember. I was around. I was paying attention to things, and I don't remember this story, so I must have somehow missed it. But this is starring Michael Fassbender, and of course we have Elizabeth Moss in there, who can do no wrong. I mean, she might be the greatest actor we have working today.
She's so good. She plays the goalkeeper in this.
She's very,
that's how good
very,
she is.
She's very, very good. Hopefully she's not wasted in this role. Fassbender never ever mails it in. I don't think that's he knows how to. This could be very, very funny. It could be a runaway hit, and that's what I hope it is. We're talking about Next Goal Wins. Yeah. Of course,
some much needed levity in the fall season.
The creator's already been talked about. 57 Seconds also has a Macon Blair connection. It's an R-rated film. The poster made me very concerned. It's starring Morgan Freeman and directed by Rusty Cundiff. But Macon Blair is one of the writers on it, and we shall see. Also, Foe from the director of Lion. Foe looks like it could be interesting. For sure. I think I've seen a trailer for this one. It's Saoirse Ronan. And Paul Mescal.
Saoirse
Ronan. I should know that by now. And Paul Mescal, who kind of confused us when he was up for Best Actor last year from his part in, what was the name of that movie with his daughter? I'm drawing a blank, Brian. I'm so sick.
Well, who is it?
Paul Mescal. I'm totally leaning on the being sick thing. After Sun.
You nominated After Sun. Thank you.
After Sun, yeah.
Best Actor.
But this is a drama sci-fi thriller from Garth Davis called Foe. Garth Davis, of course, he did the Top of the Lake TV series, which was very good, which I watched, as well as Lion.
Let me ask you a question. How many Oscars do you think Saoirse Ronan, how old is she? She's probably 33 years old. How many Oscars do you think she's been nominated for?
By now? How many has she been?
That's right.
Four. Yeah.
Right? Atonement, when she was a young girl, Brooklyn, Lady Bird, and Little Women. My God, four Oscar nominations. At whatever age, how old is she? She can't be that old.
That's why they call her Oscar Hog in the business.
Oh, is that true? I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. Saoirse's Oscar Hog.
Oh, she's only 29. Wow, that's Jesus. Incredible.
Take that, James Dean. The Royal Hotel comes out October 6th here pretty soon, and that is from director Kitty Green, and is also starring Julia Garner. We just enjoyed Julia Garner and Kitty Green's work with The Assistant, assigned to us by Matt Rixner. We were both kind of blown away by that movie, and they team up again here with Royal Hotel, which is about U.S. backpackers Hannah and Liv, and they take a job in a remote Australian pub for some extra cash and are confronted with a bunch of unruly locals and a situation that grows rapidly out of their control. Something very creepy about Australia when it goes bad. Something very creepy.
That's right, remote Australia.
We will see if that one lives up. It is R-rated, so it could be honest and real.
I just had my mind blown again by Saoirse Ronan, and this one's on me because I did not realize that Miss Ronan is an American actress. I thought that she was British for sure.
Well, you assumed it with that name, right? Well,
apparently she's American, born and raised in Ireland. Well, I'm dumb.
Five Nights at Freddy's is going to make a lot of noise when it comes out. I don't know if it's going to be impactful noise or noise that sticks around, but a lot of people are going to be talking about that Five Nights at Freddy's when it comes out October 27th. I'm assuming we're going to be...
Not as interested. I'll see it, but...
Got a real cult following, and it trickles all the way down to my son, who is now 6, but he's been kind of obsessed with Freddy for the last couple years already. So
wait,
people
is it a
dress
real
up.
Place?
No, it's just this story that's
okay.
been... I'm not...
Okay.
But they finally have a movie, and people are amped. People are excited about Five Nights at Freddy's, which is essentially, if you'd imagine, Chuck E. Cheese closes down.
Or what's the other one? The fire. What's it called again? The
fire. I don't know. There's that documentary. documentary about that guy that collects all these things. But things.
Yeah, but there was, sorry, the Rockefeller explosion was like a Chuck E. Cheese competitor.
And I think that's the documentary about the guy that has preserved a bunch of those in his house. And it was an interesting documentary. Can't remember the details now, but yeah, Five Nights at Freddy's is when these guys come to life and they come kill you. And it looks goofy. It looks like it could be kind of fun. Emma Tammy directed it, and it is got Matthew Lillard, Mary Stuart Masterson is back, and Josh Hutcherson talking about Hunger Games. He's in this as well. Okay. So that's Five Nights. There's something else I was going to say about Five Nights, but I can't remember. Boring. And I'm okay with that. Thanksgiving is finally coming up, Brian. I'm surprised this isn't on your list.
It feels gimmicky.
Obligatory. Like it was it was a fun little trailer in Grindhouse, and yes, so many people demanded that it, you know, they almost willed it into existence, and here it is. Eli Roth has heard the people and he has made Thanksgiving. And I think it's just going to be a bloodbath. I think it's just going to be a whole lot of schlocky.
Speaking of which, I don't know why. I literally just had a repressed memory. When are we getting the third in the trilogy, Maxine? The trilogy
X?
Of the... Yeah.
It's not Maxine. What was her name? Her name's not...
I thought it was Maxine with three X's. No?
It was X and then... Oh, Brian, don't put me on the spot when I'm sick like this. It was X and Pearl.
Pearl was, yeah, was the, yeah, yeah, yeah. So the third movie is Maxine, I thought.
Okay, maybe you're right. I don't know. I don't know when that's coming out.
When are we getting it?
Settle down. I don't know. It's okay. Blumhouse. I should also go back and say Blumhouse is the studio that put out Five Nights at Freddy's. So I know it's going to make noise. And then I talked about Thanksgiving. Then finally, Wonka. Wonka is a movie that I don't want to exist. I don't need it to exist. And I'm terrified of loving this movie because it is from Paul King, who wrote and directed it. And Paul King has made things that I love, namely Paddington and Paddington 2. So if he does anything remotely similar with this one, I might love everything.
I'm afraid to like it.
And if it's anything like Paddington, the amazing thing about Paddington is Paddington was the bear was the weakest part of the movie. It was all of the supporting cast and characters that really made that move. Both those movies sing.
Yeah, Paddington. He might do the same thing.
He might do the same thing here. This one comes out December 15th. I'm sure we'll cover it. I just hate the fact that it exists right now, but that could all change. Fucking Wonka. Timothée Chalamet as a young Wonka, and he's really hamming it up. A lot of hamming.
God, I hate to like him. I don't want to give it up, but he's a good actor.
He's a great actor, and he's not going anywhere. And we're going to have him in our things for years to come. Years.
If he dies young, like in the next year, I'm going to be so conflicted.
Don't say that, Brian. Don't put that out there. Okay, all right, here we go. Let's move on. The show's rambling on. Gambling results. We did Haunting in Venice. I said 65 for some foolish reason. Brian said 61. Actual review with actual score with 219 reviews. The actual Rotten Tomato score is 78%, making me the winner. Gambling bit. Expendables 4 or Expend 4 Bowls is the way say the title.
Is it like me three again?
What is your guess for Expend 4 Bowls?
I heard it's really heartfelt.
No, it's heartfelt, and they brought in some top of the game people because they are looking for Oscars for
the
this.
The trailer
one.
For this is so bad.
No, it's really, really good.
Oh, really?
There's that one part, yeah, because there's like cool, fresh dialogue. I think 50 Cent says that's what I'm talking about at one point.
At one point, he's like, "Hey, look at this face. Don't shoot it."
Yeah, and that was really funny. I laughed pretty hard at that part. I think a little pee came out. I laughed so hard
at
that part. But then when he said, that's what I'm talking about, after like he shot a big gun and there was an explosion, like I got chills. It was so good. You know, I was like, yeah, that's what I was talking about too. Whatever it was we were talking about. But that was it. I was talking about that, I think. You know what I mean? It was so good. It's just, I love it, Brian. I love it.
Is this one of the sequel speakers and remakes we can look forward to talking about?
Yeah, this was number one on my list. Expend 4 Bowls is exactly what I think Hollywood needs more of.
Yeah, get back to your roots.
It's not Hollywood's fault. It's because It's not even domestic, really. It's just this thing is going to do gangbusters overseas. And I don't understand, Brian. I don't understand. Even the filmmakers realize that they don't have to try with lines like, that's what I'm talking about. They don't give a fuck because they know it's going to make money.
That's right. That's what I'm talking about.
All right, I have a score.
Let's do it. I'm going, the first number came into my head. Ready?
Yeah, on three. 1, 2, 51.
38. Oh, I'm way lower.
All right. 38. I don't know. Currently with zero reviews.
Oh, that's nothing. A good sign.
All right, let's get out of here.
All right. Is there really no, there's already Wednesday. I must know.
Why don't you check? Why don't you push refresh?
See if it's... I'm already there. Expendables 4 has no Rotten Tomatoes score, as far as I can tell.
All right. No. Let's rock this. Let's rock and roll this. Let's get going.
No score. I will tell you that it's sitting at 5.1 on IMDb. I don't know if that makes a difference.
Oh, no. That means my 51 is probably way too high. Why did I do that? Who cares? There's no stakes anyways. I don't even know why we gamble anymore.
Fun. It's the only time Expendables 4 will be mentioned on the show.
I took my dad towards the end. He was pretty far gone with his dementia, but he was still living at home, and I was still taking him out to lunch and movie theaters. It was when we'd be at the ticket counter, at the popcorn counter. I'd be buying him popcorn, and he would be going on and on to the poor lady that worked behind the counter, that she should have a tip jar. And she's losing out on all sorts of money. You should always have a tip jar on the counter because, people will tip you. And she's like, no, sir, we're not allowed to do that here at the movie theater, sir. Please, sir, here's your popcorn, sir. And he would not let it go. Just, all right, Dad, keep it moving. But yeah, I took him to the Expendables, and he enjoyed it quite a bit.
Jim Rutherford, excellent listener, Art. I'm looking at it right now. Anderson, you look, the body they gave you is much chubbier than what it would be portrayed in real life.
I did not notice that, but thank you for pointing that out, Brian. I need everyone to know that.
It's good. Good stuff. Good stuff. Jim Rutherford, thank you for listener art. Check that out over at AndersonandBrian.com. But while you're there, check out Roundhouse. There are feature artists this week. And go ahead and tap on that Amazon link. That'll take you over to Amazon, do your shopping, buy whatever you want, buy more than you want if you'd like. And cost you absolutely nothing, and we get a few pennies on the back end. So win, 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 win.
Daddy, why do I have to join the Boy Scouts?
That's a fair question.
I think my wife would be pretty upset with this listener.
Oh, really?
If I explained to her where the bit comes from, yeah.
Where does the bit come from?
Or, I think I misheard you, and you were suggesting that. I thought you were saying something that like all kids have to go to the Boy Scouts, like they have to sign up like for military.
I don't remember that.
Like they got drafted, and then I was suggesting that a bunch of like creepy chubby rosy cheeked men were like, yes, they have to sign up.
Yes, they must.
Each boy must.
All right. Anderson and Brian is the Instagram. Anderson and Brian is the TikTok. Facebook, Twitter, The Film Vault, the YouTube, The Film Vault Podcast. Thanks, Eric Kath, for maintaining the YouTube page. We appreciate you. We'll be back on YouTube next week when Anderson's feeling better, hopefully. Giovanni,
Brian,
Mike Burns, Mike Cole, thank you guys for your assistance. What's up?
Well, over under, what would you put the money at that Wonka shows up on my top 10 list at the end of the year?
Oh, my God.
What do you think the money line is?
That's a long shot. I would say plus. $1,000. I it's possible that
plus 220.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't allow myself to put it on a list, but I know my taste and I know what this guy's done before, and
that's true.
There's a very good chance that I'm going to love this and just be so ashamed and so upset. Do you know that
I'll be there
the great Guillermo del Toro had Paddington 2 as his favorite movie of the year a few years ago.
And I can't, it was a great movie.
I can't fault him for it. I mean, it was a great fucking movie. Oh, no.
Oh, exciting. Yeah, I would put it a longer shot, but you make a compelling point. There's
Hugh Grant, Sally Hawkins, Olivia Colman, yeah. Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean himself, Keegan, Michael Key. These are the people. Matt Lucas is in there. These are the people that might make this movie sing.
You've won me over. Yeah, there's a path to success for this movie.
I will not allow it to be on any, a hopeful list, though, or anticipation list.
Anticipatory.
But I can't help but be honest. And if it strikes, but people are floating around and stuff. Hey, it looks corny. I hate it. Get it out. Okay, let's get out of here.
You're really
fuck this movie. Yeah, I know. Maybe I just ban it. Maybe there's a world where I just don't see it, and then I can just be safe. Mm-hmm. Oh no! What are like singing like, numbers?
What if it's like 99% of Rotten Tomatoes?
What that doesn't affect. I don't give a fuck.
What I'm saying, what is the universally beloved?
It might be. I could see a world where that happens.
All right. Well, I'm excited for this. All right, you guys. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for downloading. And until next time,
we do it for Bad Guys.